Welcome back to another fresh episode of Incongruent Plus. We have with us, live and in stereo, tap dancer, Broadway veteran, choreographer, comedian, and so much more than I can remember, Mina Licchioni! All right, guys, this is Zainab taking charge with my amazing co-host, Arjun.
Kaboom!
Thanks, dude. All right, Mina, you are the star of our show, so let's come back to you. Time for some serious and burning questions for you, all right?
Burning? That sounds like a not-so-nice rash.
I just meant rapid-fire questions. All right, Mina, ready for your first one?
Sure.
Arjun, let's go.
Okay, so the first question, what do you do when no one else is around or you're home alone?
I hide in the bathroom and lock the door because I'm a mom. I have toddler twins, no alone time. I'm telling you, especially since quarantine happened, before it's like, okay, we'd say goodbye. I'd go out and do a shoot or, you know, go to a rehearsal. But now the boys, they're two. They know that I'm always in the house. They are everywhere. They are like CCTV. They know things. Before I even go to the kitchen, they're in the kitchen. Mama. Hi, Mama. I'm like, oh my gosh. So there's only one room that has a lock, and it's one of the, it's the guest bathroom upstairs. So I'm giving away my secret. So at least every few days, I'll just go in there. I'll put some headphones on. I'll watch something. I'll maybe like message with some friends just to have a few minutes of just quiet alone time. Yeah, and I do eat ice cream. I love, I have a passion for ice cream. So sometimes I'll sneak it because I don't want them eating ice cream all the time. They have enough stuff, but those are my two things, hiding in the bathroom and Ben and Jerry's.
Okay, Mina, tell me, other than comedy, what would secretly be your dream job?
My dream job would be Oprah's job. Absolutely. I would love to be a talk show host, but also Oprah, I love so much because she's so passionate about what she does, but she genuinely also wants to help people. So she uses her platform to talk about important issues, to help people heal. And sometimes it's really funny. Sometimes it's really serious. But either way, Oprah, I would love that. That would be my dream job.
Have you tried it somehow? At home, yeah. Maybe?
Yes. I actually, I've done some hosting, and during quarantine, you definitely have to come up with some fun activities with your kids. So yeah, Right. Sure. We've played TV show host. I also do a lot of improv, and one of the games is called TV show host. So I've played around there. And maybe 10 years ago, I had went to visit, my great aunt was in a senior center, and it was so sad. Everyone there was just, they were so lonely and just seemed so sad. And she said to me, she goes, why don't you come do a comedy show here? And I said, okay. But I wanted to, it had to be a character that would be relatable for people 70 to 90 years old. So I created a character called Audrey Hotburn. And she had a huge, like a big yellow, like wig, kind of like a Golden Girls. If you guys ever saw the show, The Golden Girls, and she still had like a roller in her hair. She has big glasses, very, very loud outfits. And she was 70 years old. And the whole structure of the show was kind of like an Ellen type of show where she did funny segments, audience participation. We did Sweating with the Oldies so that they got to sit in their wheelchairs and do some fitness. We did a baking segment, but I said, why bake it when you can buy it? And I So that was kind of living the dream, though, through this character. But the funny thing is the Audrey Hepburn show, this is right before I moved to Dubai. We ended up going on tour, 25 senior centers throughout New York State, because the word got out that the show was so much fun and it was making the residents laugh that we got 25, that we went on tour. Who would have thought? So that was my, yeah, that was my, there was no TV there, but we pretended. And I, you know.
So my next question to Mina is like, what are your top three biggest pet peeves?
Oh, wow. Pet peeves. Oh, gosh, there's a list. I think, one of them, a pet peeve of mine is when people do not read anything. So say you send an email and you're like, okay, I'll see you tomorrow, 12 noon. Let's just make something up, right? Say that I'm emailing you and I'll say, great, I'll see you tomorrow, Caribou Coffee, Spring Souk, 12 noon. And then you reply back to me saying, so where are we meeting? It drives me nuts. It's like, just read what I just wrote you. And people will do that all the time. And WhatsApp groups are my second pet peeve. When people add you to like these groups that you're just like, I don't even know any of these people, and why am I in this group? And then there's like all these notifications, and then you're like, do I leave the group? Am I gonna offend somebody? Okay, can I just like not have notifications? I tend to leave the group if it's an unnecessary group. But yeah, people have stopped adding me because I've asked them to, my friend. I'm like, please don't add me to any more WhatsApp groups. It's my private thing. That would be number two. Another pet peeve of mine, this one's actually a more serious one, when big companies, large corporations, especially during COVID-19, who weren't really affected, some of their businesses actually thrived. When they ask artists to perform for free, when the artists are deeply, deeply affected, and many of us out of work for months at a time, that was definitely a deeper pet peeve on many, many different levels. I had one big company said, our employees are really depressed. They're at home. You know, many of them, you know, in their penthouses, they have nothing to do. Can you please do a show for them? And I was like, yeah, well, what's the budget? Well, you know, during these difficult times, we don't have a budget. I'm like, no. you gotta pay the artists. You got to pay the artists. That's like me going to the doctors and being like, hey man, come on. You know, come on, man, I'll pay you next time. You give me this one and, you know, let's work together. Let's collaborate on the surgery.
Okay.
So Mina, pick a TV or movie character that represents you.
Oh my goodness. Oh, wow, that's a hard, well, the thing is, I'm going to tell you lately, many, and the thing is, I haven't seen this show. So it's funny that I'm going to choose this character that I haven't even seen yet. But everyone, I'm talking like hundreds of people have been like, Mina, you need to watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Everybody keeps telling me that, oh my God, this character, she reminds me so much of you. Oh, you have to watch this show. So according to everybody else, that would be it. According to me, I don't know. Maybe that's a good question. That's a hard one. Probably a cartoon character. Maybe a cartoon character. Well, with big hair and a loud nasally voice. I don't know. I'm thinking The Simpsons. I think they could make me a character on The Simpsons that doesn't exist yet. Like maybe Marge has a cousin because her sisters smoke too much and they're too angry. So it wouldn't be one of them. So maybe Marge's artistic, creative, comedian cousin. And we'll just name her Mina. That would be awesome.
All right.
Mina, pick one. Pineapple on pizza or not?
God, no. Haram. Oh, my God. I'm Italian. Are you kidding me? Get out. That's it. The interview is over. The interview is over, people. Next, what are you going to do? You going to potato sauce gravy? What are we? What are we doing?
So, tell us about the favorite show that you have done.
That I have been in? My favorite show? Oh, wow. I have two sides of the coin. I have two sides of the coin. I think younger Mina, my favorite show was Stomp. Hands down. Stomp was my dream show. I had started taking dance class when I was 3, and I trained really, really hard to, my dream was to get on Broadway. And when I saw Stomp as a teenager, I was like, this is it. This, it had dance, it had music, it had comedy, it had acting, the fashion, it was just like, you know, people from the streets, you know what I mean? It was like, it was so cool. And it was on Broadway and it was amazing. And I wanted so hard to be in that show, and I got there. So that, wow, for me, it was life changing. And I got paid to do what I loved. I got health insurance. I got to tour the world with a show that every single day I walked on that stage, like, I can't believe I get to do this. And people would, you know, save up money to buy a ticket to go to that show. People would wait afterwards, and kids, you know, can I get my picture with you? Can you show me how to drum this? It was the first time that I really felt the power and the impact of art on that level. And then years later, my favorite show, for a very different reason, was clowning in a hospital. I had gone through a very, very, very difficult injury. I had crushed all of my ribs, and my lung collapsed. I had internal bleeding. I was told I would probably never dance again, never perform again to that level as an athlete. And I was so depressed. I was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And then I kind of stumbled across, you know, like using your art to help people in hospitals. And I went from like performing to sold out theaters of thousands of people to performing for one little boy who is battling leukemia and his mom to try to make them laugh. And that changed my whole life. Whole everything, the way I look at comedy, the way I look at the performing arts, because before, yeah, I loved it, but there was an ego in it. You have to have ego to be a performer. You have to. You have to have, to a certain level, you have to have confidence. You have to really love it, and because it's very demanding. But then to be able to have this real connection, this pure, honest connection, and realize the higher purpose of your God-given talent, that for me changed everything. And now everything I perform, every gig I take, every big project, the classes I teach, we started Clowns Who Care, which is basically to bring joy to those in need, from refugee camp tours to orphanages to centers for children and adults with determination. That is really where my art has evolved to. So two very different sides of the coin for two very, very different reasons. But once you get a little bit older and you realize, wow, I can have much more of an impact. Now that I have this foundation, what do I want to do with it?
So if I'm not wrong, back in 2017, you had your first televised stand-up comedy debut, right?
Yes, Araby by Nature was my first 1 hour comedy special. That was kind of okay. Wow, you guys are you don't know what you're opening up here. It's a can of worms. You guys are better journalists than you even thought, huh? But yes, that was funny enough, I had just found out that I was pregnant and nobody knew. And I said to my husband, and I said, I want to film my 1 hour special now. It has to happen now before I became a mom, because there was a lot that I wanted to say. There was 10 years of material, and it was time. It was time to do a special and put everything together. And I was so happy at that time because I had that secret and I knew it was ahead. So it was kind of like the marking of an end of a chapter for me. But it was such, that 1 hour show was so special. It's called special for a reason because it's special, but my whole heart, I put on that stage, I put into those jokes. But there was a lot of, I talked about a lot of different topics and a lot of stereotypes, and some were funny and some, I'm going to make you laugh, but now I'm going to make you think. And then I end with a song and dance because I love, I'm still a Broadway baby. But that show, I still get emotional when I think of Araby by Nature, because it was a very, I tell my husband, I said, one day these boys are going to watch that special and I'm going to say, that's you in there. But no one knew. No one knew. Yeah. And then later on, I filmed for Comedy Central and I was 8 months pregnant and no one knew that it was twins. Only our parents do. Yes. So there's an episode of me. I look like I'm about to pop at any second. Even the people in the audience are like, wow, she looks really big. And I gave birth 2 weeks later, 2 weeks after that filming. So I'm like, those boys better thank me. They got stage credit. They got TV credit before they were even born. These boys, they got, come on, they can say, well, technically I was on Comedy Central Arabia twice. On their CV, at what age? Negative? negative 1 month. But yeah, that was a very, very, very special and precious time that I hold very, very, very close to my heart. That'd be by nature.
So what exactly drew you to comedy?
Another big question, huh? See, comedy, it's a very big word with a lot of big meanings to it. Because comedy, you have stand-up comedy, you have improv, you have physical comedy, you have clowning. You have comedy series, you have comedy films, you have comedy writing, you have joke writing, joke telling. There's so much that goes into it. Comedy for me is a way of life. It's my culture. It's how I was raised. It's a sense of humor. My dad is hilarious. He has a huge personality. Hey, what are you talking about? Hey, come here. He literally talks like this. What are you talking about? Hey, I could have been on TV, but they told me I had a better face for radio. Oh, he's a big... he's always telling jokes and creating characters. So growing up... my dad was a boxing promoter, so he worked at night, and my mom worked during the day. So I remember spending all afternoon with my dad just making up characters and doing voices and laughing. And so it's a way of life. And I remember always too, you know, you get to this point where if something bad, there's always going to be bad times. There's always going to be bad times. But my family were able to see the humor in it quicker than maybe some other of my friends maybe. So I always kind of found myself doing that. Like, pain in time is comedy. Pain in time is definitely comedy. And the quicker you can make a joke about it, the quicker you heal about it. You know, and that's definitely got me through this quarantine. So comedy found me. I did nothing. It was the way I was raised. And, you know, my parents put me in tap dance class when I was three because I was always dancing around the house. And they said I was very musical. So they wanted, and I was shy. I was very shy only kid. So they put me in dance class and they said, I haven't shut up since. That's the story they tell me.
We should actually have a sort of a university degree for comedy, right?
But there is a college in New England in the States that does have a comedy studies degree. Ooh. And and also in Chicago, their second city, that have linked up with one of the universities in Chicago to do an overlap program where it's theater and comedy and improv together. And then in San Francisco, right before I had moved here, we did a bridge program with New College of California and the Circus Center. And it was the very first physical comedy and theatrical circus degree, which was crazy at the time. So there are these small programs. It's just not very common. You have to really search for them. But there are these golden nuggets that'll popping out. And the one right now, the comedy studies one, is where Jay Leno graduated. It's the college where he graduated. So we'll have to Google that later. I want to say Amherst, but it's not that. It's at Emory, or I forget. But so many comedy writers were studying writing at that school that finally they were like, they kept pitching it. They're like, come on, let's do a comedy studies. There's so many writers and, you know, people doing pilots and different shows. And they finally agreed to it, which is super exciting. But it's only a few years old.
What and who was the motivation for you to start up the organization, Dibamati, like a comedy school for girls in the region?
Well, Dubomedy is Dubai plus comedy, basically. That's kind of how the name is. And the school, well, I think I had come here in the summer of 2007 as a performer. I was booked. I was hired to come perform, and then it kept getting extended. It was like supposed to be 2 weeks, then it was 3 weeks, then it was a month, then it was a month and a half, because I kept getting booked to teach workshops, to perform stand-up, to MC, to perform this or that. And it was like everyone I met kept saying, gosh, it would be great if we had a local comedy scene here. We really need more comedy. At the time, they were only flying comedians in, like myself, and they were always importing. So I had spoke with a couple of people, and at the time there was Duck Tack, and they said, you know, we'll give you the space if you wanted to come back and maybe start a comedy and urban art school. And then at the same time, New York Film Academy was in talks of opening up in Abu Dhabi. So I spoke with them and they were like, well, we can also, we need an improv teacher and a voice in movement. So I was like, okay, all the arrows were pointing here. Anything sustainable, I think the cornerstone of anything sustainable is education. So it made sense that how are we going to build a comedy community when no one's ever performed comedy here? So I did a workshop. I wanted to start doing the workshops to kind of like help them learn how to write jokes, how to structure things, how to do public speaking, physical comedy, timing, delivery, you know, coach them up. Basically what people do for years in open mic nights. Right here, it's like, okay, let's give them a workshop in a very supportive environment, because people were very nervous, especially over here. It's like, oh, God, stand-up comedy. Oh, gosh, it's gonna be dirty. It's going to be vulgar. It's going to be inappropriate. So we kind of had to teach people, like, no, it's your own voice. It's your voice. So it made sense to start with the workshops, and we're still doing them now. And I had met my husband a few months after I moved here, and he had the same passion. He wanted to build a community. So we kind of, Adi and I kind of joined forces. We launched the school, and we still have classes. We still have classes every Saturday for 12 years now. And then I think you're thinking of Funny Girls. Funny Girls is one of the projects under Dubomini, which was the first and only all-female stand-up comedy troupe. And that was awesome. And every year, we tour every year. We like to link up with Breast Cancer Awareness Month, because it's so important and passionate to all of us to use our comedy for good, but to also really encourage women to get tested who might be really scared or uncomfortable, about it, and to encourage men to talk to their moms and say, Mom, I love you. I love you, Mom. We have to talk about this hard stuff. Just go get tested, Mom. So, and, we have improv troupes. We've done festivals. We have Clowns Who Care Project under there, which all started with that one performance for that one boy in a hospital. So I think no matter what your career is, there's going to be these little moments where you're like, wow, this is a life-changing moment, and it could be something so tiny. But if all the arrows are pointing in one direction, you're like, I just have to keep going with it. So I didn't know. I had no, if someone would have told me that I'd be living in the Middle East, I married an Arab Muslim man, I have twins, running a comedy school, being the only, pretty much the only female, a full-time professional female comedian in the UAE, I would have said, no, you're crazy. I never, ever in a million years would have guessed that. So honestly, you just have to look at the signs and take that leap of faith when it feels right. I didn't really plan it. It kind of happened on its own. And I said, you know what? This is needed. This is important. And you know what? I have an opportunity to create something that's going to help make other people laugh and kind of like heal. So, I don't know. It wasn't planned at all.
Mina, if I remember correctly, you did organize a show, a local show to promote, artists during the COVID pandemic. So are you looking into another one soon?
Oh, well, it's the tail. Gosh, right now is such a weird, like, transitional time, because now things are starting to open back up, right? Correct. So this is kind of the tiptoeing back. It's like, oh my gosh, we started getting phone calls from theaters now and venues, saying, okay, can we set some dates? And we're like, oh, wow. So now I think we're probably gonna not do so much online, but more start transitioning into, okay, social distancing shows, shows that people are very confident that they feel safe and comfortable in. So I think now is about exploring that. Because I'm not gonna lie, I have a lot of anxiety when I go grocery shopping right now. I'm still like, okay, wait, do I have my mask on? Do I have my gloves? Okay, don't touch my phone. Do this. Like, I'm thinking about every moment. And when I have to think about every second, it gives me anxiety. So just going to a restaurant, I went to a restaurant just like last week. It was my husband and I's anniversary. We went out to dinner and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the first time I haven't even sat out and had dinner at a restaurant. So for me, I'm like, how would I feel going to see a live show right now? I think I'd still be a little nervous. Honestly, I'd have to take baby steps to kind of get to that place. So what we're trying to do is help create those baby steps so that artists can feel comfortable, but also people who really want to laugh and feel inspired also feel comfortable. So right now we're kind of focusing on healing that gap. But we're doing one final, we called it the comedy lockdown. We're doing one final one right now, actually, because also a lot of comedians and artists are really afraid that, oh my gosh, venues are opening up. Did I write? Do I have new material ready to jump on the stage? So this is kind of, we're doing our final 2 week kind of, it's like an incubator to test out, get all the new material ready. It's like going to the gym for comedians. You gotta write, you gotta feel confident. And people haven't been on a stage in months. This is the longest, I've never ever in my life gone this long without standing on a stage since I was 3. So it's weird. It's very bizarre. It's gonna be like, okay, all right. I'm all about supporting local talent. I always have been. I am local talent, so I know. I know what the needs are when you just need a platform and you just need someone to believe in you and say, hey, you know what? I'm gonna offer you this spot to come perform your new songs. So we'll always do that. That's what I believe in, and I will always do that.
One last question from my side. You are a tap dancer as well as a comedian. So how do you blend the dance and the concept of dance and comedy together when you're present in a stage?
Ooh, well, I don't really perform us. I don't tap dance in stand-up. I've never tap danced as part of a stand-up comedy show before. And funny enough, I was just talking to Ivy saying, I would love to find a way to do that. So right now, my tap dance is always humorous because it depends on the song, or if it's a cappella, it depends on the character. I like to do characters who tap dance and tell stories and stuff like that. With stand-up, I've done dance and music, like parody songs and dance jokes. But
yeah, I've seen that quite much on YouTube.
You've seen it, yeah. I found that I was able to find a way. The thing is if you consciously try too hard to fit two things together, it doesn't feel natural. So the dance jokes kind of happened on its own because it was physical comedy. It was literally me going to the beach in July in Dubai and literally like, oh my God, it's so hot. And I was barefoot. I was literally like, I'm like running. So that's how that became the joke. And then I thought, oh gosh, how did other dance moves start? So that kind of was the catalyst of that. I sing a song about a shatafa because I went to New York and I missed it so much. I was like, oh my gosh.
So I just saw that yesterday.
You did?
I did see that song yesterday. I was like, oh God, I couldn't stop laughing. It was like...
It's real, you know, like I all my comedy is based on my life experience. So my next step is to naturally find a way to get tap dance into a stand-up comedy show. So I'll say inshallah to that. I would like to, by October, that's one of my goals, is to actually tap dance as part of a stand-up show. At the end, it would be like a finale or something. You're the first to know.
We have so many more questions that are probably left unanswered for now. But hopefully, yeah. Can we see you again in 2020, Mina, at university?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
You bet. And jokes on masks and sanitizers, because that would be fun.
Oh, ton.
All right. Thank you so much, Mina. Can we have a cheer for her, please? Woo! And thank you to our wonderful audience for joining us for another special show of The Incongruent. See you guys very soon.